G'day, Starlo here with another episode of Cutting Edge Fishing Wisdom. And in this one, I want to take a deep dive into the sometimes complicated subject of catch and release versus catch and keep, or, as I've referred to it in a somewhat irreverent and tongue-in-cheek way, kill and grill. When you stop and think about it, fishing's unique amongst the hunting sports. As anglers, we're able to enjoy the full experience of finding and stalking our prey, hooking, playing and landing a fish, and yet we can still choose to exercise the option of returning our catch to the water alive. Despite this luxury, though, we must never forget that fishing is and will always remain a form of hunting. Catch and release fishing is a truly wonderful thing, in my opinion. It makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside to let a good fish swim free, or it should. Most of us would also like to hope that smart catch and release fishing strengthens our claim about being committed conservationists, dedicated to the sustainability of our sport. Surely such a stance gives us more credibility in our dealings with government agencies, the media, and environmental groups. Well, yes, and also, potentially, no. Like it or not, the whole concept of catch and release is increasingly being called into question, especially in some parts of the world. There are even stories from time to time that catch and release has been banned or strictly curtailed, especially in some European countries, although it's hard to nail these reports down and actually verify them. However, there's certainly no doubt that anglers in some places are being strongly encouraged, if not legally mandated, to catch only what they need to kill those fish humanely and to take them home and eat them. At one level, this sounds quite reasonable, but I do wonder how it sits in terms of undersized fish, protected species, bag limits, closed seasons, and so on. The more cynical side of my nature also strongly suspects that limiting, banning, or even threatening to ban catch and release could simply be another step on the rocky road to banning our sport altogether. I hope I'm wrong. Thankfully, we're a long way from such a situation in Australia. We can still go fishing in lots of places. Less each year, to be sure, but still lots. And in many instances, we can choose whether we want to keep a few fish for the table, within the current rules and regulations, or unhook them and return all or part of our catch to the water. But it's a freedom we should never take for granted. Of course, there's little point in releasing a fish if it's going to succumb to the stresses and strains of capture and handling and turn up its fins within hours or days of being set free. Catch and release only makes good sense if the survival rates of those released fish are consistently high. Thankfully, post-release mortality studies on a wide range of Australian fish species have shown generally excellent survival rates, often in the order of 80 to 90% and even better with some types. As you might expect, these rates vary considerably depending on the species involved, how and where it was caught, and of course, how well it was handled. Some fish, Spanish mackerel are a prime example, don't handle all that well at all. Unfortunately, removing a large mackerel from the water to unhook and photograph it before releasing it often condemns that fish to death within hours or days. Some of the tuna family don't fare much better in this regard. Fast in-water release is really the only option for them. Even then, long-term survival isn't always a certainty. Reef fish pulled up from deep water and exposed to the physical effects of sudden pressure change or barotrauma may also have quite low survival rates at times. At the opposite end of the spectrum, popular species like brim, flathead, yellowbelly and bass all cope surprisingly well with careful handling. If they're mouth-hooked on a lure or fly as opposed to gut-hooked on bait, and if the weather and the water aren't too hot and their time out of the water is minimised, these fish almost always live to fight another day. That's great news for those of us who occasionally or frequently practice catch and release, and I'm pleased to report that the number of anglers making that choice seems to be growing each year. Recreational fishing in Australia has certainly changed over the past three or four decades. As recently as the 1970s and 80s, The prowess of Australian fishermen, and yes, most of them were men in those days, was often measured in terms of their ability to amass the heaviest bag of dead fish in the shortest possible time. Fishing competitions of that era reflected this attitude, with club weigh-ins dominated by piles of fish carcasses, some of which were invariably dumped at the local garbage tip or back into the sea after the trophies had been handed out and the victory photos snapped. There was a widespread belief at the time, one shared by recreational anglers, commercial fishers and the general public, that our seas and rivers represented an almost inexhaustible larder of fresh seafood ready for harvest. However, by the mid-1980s, this misguided philosophy was being increasingly called into question, especially as fish stocks in many waters began to show obvious signs of decline. Over the subsequent decades, recreational fishing in Australia has been totally transformed, as it has throughout much of the developed world. The vast majority of thinking anglers nowadays take pride in being seen as guardians and stewards of both the fish themselves and the aquatic environments that sustain those fish. In short, wreck fishers have evolved from being a part of the problem into being a vital component in the solution. But the actual concept of catch and release in recreational fishing is actually much more than just a few decades old. It dates back to at least the 1950s, when it began to be popularised by angling influencers of the time, such as American fly fishing author and filmmaker Lee Wolfe. However, in those days, the idea of voluntarily releasing an edible, legal-sized fish was still something of a novelty for most weekend hopefuls. Over time, this attitude began to shift, partly due to the uptake of catchy slogans such as let 'em go, let 'em grow, limit your kill, don't kill your limit, or too good to catch just once. At the same time, there was a growing emphasis in angling magazines, videos, and fishing-related TV programs about releasing at least some fish that might have otherwise been legally kept. The 1970s and 80s also saw the growth of a worldwide environmental movement, and with it, an increasing awareness of the fragility of our planet, along with an acceptance of the urgent need to modify human behaviour in order to protect that planet for the benefit of our own and future generations. Hand in hand with this understanding of the finite nature of our natural resources and an accompanying grassroots change in attitude amongst anglers has come increasing regulation by state and territory fisheries managers. Bag size and gear limits have now been introduced for many species across most jurisdictions. These regulations stipulate how many fish of each species can be kept, what size they need to be, and what forms of equipment or fishing methods can be used to catch them. There are also more and more closed seasons and no-take periods to protect specific fish populations during their spawning migrations and at other vulnerable times. But today, many keen Australian anglers voluntarily take things much further than this, choosing to set their own personal limits that are considerably more restrictive than those that are mandated by law. Some even opt to carefully release every fish they catch, although the vast majority of fishers, myself included, still value the opportunity to harvest an occasional meal of fresh seafood for ourselves and our close families and friends. For us, this remains an important aspect of the sport. However, I reckon sustainably harvesting selected fish for the table is best viewed by anglers and the broader community as a privilege rather than a right, one that needs to be earned and defended. Recreational anglers across Australia increasingly recognise that their social licence or public support to continue practising the pastime they're so passionate about is very much dependent on their ability to demonstrate responsible stewardship of the fish stocks and the aquatic environments. Even more importantly, most of us have a deep desire and an obvious vested interest in protecting those environments. Sustainability is now a key concept in all forms of fisheries management and a motivating force in the day-to-day activities of thinking fishers everywhere. The emphasis today is on fishing for the future so that we can all continue to fish for life. But from time to time, I've had cause to do a little soul-searching on the subject of catch and release. Once when I posted a short video promoting the idea of letting go big, slow-growing and long-lived species like trophy black brim, I was taken to task by one critic who attacked me via social media, effectively accusing me of being completely out of touch with real anglers and of betraying my fishing roots. His argument was that most anglers go fishing primarily to catch a feed of fish, and that, like him, they tend to keep and eat anything legal they're lucky enough to catch. He went on to have a general rant about TV fishing shows constantly ramming the catch and release concept down people's throats. Now, while I beg to differ with many of this bloke's assertions, I also grudgingly admit that he does have a point. In some areas, the pendulum may have swung a little too far in the direction of catch and release. I'm on record many times over, in fact, arguing the case that we give up our right to keep a feed of fish at the peril of our pastime. I firmly believe that if we ever surrender that right, it'll be much easier for anti-fishing forces to stop us doing what we love. It's a slippery slope. As already mentioned, in some European countries, catch and release is now actively discouraged as cruel and unnecessary abuse of fish. The argument goes that if you must fish, and in some places even that's barely tolerated, then you should do so solely for the purpose of securing a meal. Look, at one level I can see some logic to this line of thought. Despite the fact that repeated scientific studies have failed to provide evidence that fish are capable of perceiving pain as we understand it, I can accept that the concept of catch and release doesn't sit well with some folks. I respect their opinions, even if I don't necessarily agree with them. I keep and eat plenty of fish, but I also let a heck of a lot go for all sorts of reasons. The ratio between what I opt to kill and what I choose to return to the water varies enormously depending on the species involved, as well as the location and the situation. However, I staunchly defend my right to make that choice, so long as I'm acting within the law. Keeping a meal or two of fresh, self-caught fish is a commendable goal in my book, as long as you're abiding by the regulations where you're fishing. But I also believe that catch and release is a great thing, and one to be strongly encouraged in many, many fisheries. As with so much in life, it's a matter of getting the balance right. While some recreational fishers regard themselves as purist catch-and-release advocates and express disdain over the killing of any fish by their fellow anglers, they too need to accept that fishing is a blood sport. In my opinion, people who object on moral or ethical grounds to killing fish really shouldn't fish at all, because even with the best of intentions and excellent handling practices, no one can guarantee the survival of every fish released. In other words, if you go fishing, a certain number of fish are going to die. It's as simple as that. I think this blood sport aspect of recreational fishing is too often ignored or glossed over. Instead of doing that, I reckon we should be actively embracing it. In an age when people are increasingly insulated from nature and from the processes involved in providing food for the table, fishing represents a hands-on link to reality and to our past, to a time when humans hunted and gathered successfully or went hungry. And here's a little bit of irony for you. Recent studies into the environmental costs of food show that all food production has environmental costs, which is pretty obvious, but that the lowest impact forms of animal protein come from species that feed naturally in the ocean and can be harvested with relatively low fuel requirements. In fact, when compared to other studies of vegetarian and even vegan diets, a selective diet of both aquaculture-produced and wild-caught fish can have a lower environmental impact than either of those plant-based diet regimes. Interesting, eh? Of course, no one in modern Australia is likely to starve if they can't catch a fish. Nonetheless, the ability to provide fresh seafood for ourselves and our families remains one of the greatest attractions of angling, and nothing that anybody says is ever likely to change that reality, nor the human emotions and aspirations that sustain it. Fortunately, plenty of room still exists in Australian recreational angling for a mix of both styles of fishing, catch and release and catch and keep. Or kill and grill. The trick lies in identifying the more appropriate approach under the prevailing circumstances. Obviously, in some situations, the only option is to release a fish, particularly when keeping it places you on the wrong side of the law. Examples include the capture of undersized or oversized or protected fish, species taken out of season, or those in excess of a bag limit. There's also no point in keeping fish that you can't use or don't need. It's a no-brainer that all these fish should be released. Beyond those parameters, personal choice and informed decision-making come into play. I'd strongly urge you to more closely examine and question your own fishing choices, especially your motivations for releasing some fish and keeping others. I think it's a worthwhile exercise. Killing anything for whatever reason isn't an act that we should be flippant about. Ancient hunters went to extraordinary lengths to celebrate and honour the prey that sustained them, often via elaborate rituals, art and mythology. It's a level of connection and respect that's far removed from casually picking up a couple of pork chops cling-wrapped to a styrofoam tray from the supermarket shelf and dropping them into your shopping trolley. I suspect we've lost a lot in the process of becoming civilized. My message is pretty simple. Whenever you fish, consciously choose what to kill and what to let go. Do a good job of both, and always honour and respect your catch. In keeping with this ethos, I've developed my own voluntary code of conduct that boils down to 5 kill and grill commandments, for want of a better name. Here they are. 1. Don't keep fish unless you're sure you're going to use them. There are parcels of long-forgotten fillets hiding in the dark, icy bowels of freezers all over Australia that'll ultimately end up being thrown away when they're finally discovered. That's a shameful waste of a precious resource. 2, don't use friends and neighbours as an excuse to keep more fish than you normally would. Look, while passing on an occasional meal of fresh seafood to someone who doesn't or can't go fishing seems a noble enough pursuit, once it becomes a justification for killing a few more each time you head out, well, it's well and truly past its use-by date. Leave it to the commercial sector to feed non-fishers. It's not your job. Commandment 3, utilise as much of your catch as you possibly can. Honour the fish you kill by reducing wastage. Make fish stock from the heads and frames. Collect the wings for a delicious fry-up. Most of us, myself included, can definitely lift our game in this department. Likewise, try and make better use of the so-called B-grade species. Many of them are much tastier than we've been led to believe. 4, avoid freezing fish unless it's absolutely necessary. Unfrozen fish will keep in the ordinary part of your fridge for at least 5 or 6 days, which should be plenty long enough to consume it. I prefer to eat fresh fish, then go out and catch some more. Now, I understand this isn't always achievable, but I firmly believe that working towards a no-freeze goal would have some very positive outcomes. Finally, 5, make conscious, educated decisions about what to keep and what to release based on the best information available. How old are the fish you're catching? How many times are they likely to have spawned? What shape's the fishery in? What are the survival prospects of those fish if they're released? These are all important questions. Do your best to find some answers and make your choices accordingly. We're so lucky here in Australia. We can still fish, it doesn't cost as much to do so, and we can still choose whether to let the fish we catch go or keep them and eat them. And if we choose the latter path, we're eating a healthy, sustainable and low-impact form of protein. Let's appreciate that luck and do our best to hang on to it. Until next time, this is Starlo wishing you tight lines. And if you'd like to help me produce more instructional content like this in the future, please consider buying me a coffee or shouting me a beer. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/Starlo to find out how. Until next time, tight lines.